This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh, it's going to be a wonderful day. I have in the studio with me one of my very, very favorite authors, Carol J. Perry. Hi, Carol.
Good morning, Patsy. Thank you for inviting me.
Okay. Move in a little closer. We want to hear you today. Okay. That's great.
That better?
Okay. Yes. Okay. Well, it is so wonderful to welcome you back to the program. You've been here a lot. She's here every Halloween, yep. And now we're going to make it in February. You're writing so many books.
Two mysteries a year, and this year I'm aiming to do three books, including two mysteries, and I'm going to try my hand at writing a romance.
Wow. You know, when I started this program, I didn't know any local writers. I didn't know any writers. I knew nobody. And as a matter of fact, I think you were the very first in-studio guest I had.
I think I may have been.
Yes. And I was so excited. Wow. And what you have accomplished. I'm going to be celebrating the fourth anniversary of Joy on Paper in March. Mm-hmm. I've got some really exciting, you know, guests coming, and I'm so glad that you're sort of ushering in this celebration for the fourth anniversary, because you came out with a book just in time. It's called Final Exam. Mm-hmm. It is, it is really, I love this. First of all, I got such a kick out of the name. I just thought, that's so perfect for knowing the character. Mm-hmm. You have to tell us about it. So we're going to talk about that in a little while. I'm just waiting for a call from Lisa Gardner, and she's going to be calling from New York. So we're going to talk to her, but we'll talk also to you in between, and then after I finish with her, because she's got a busy tour going on. With her latest book, her book is number 10, and Final Exam is number
8.
8 in mm-hmm. yours, so you're catching up, boy. Wow, it's exciting,
I'm so thrilled to be on with one of my very favorite authors.
Isn't it?
I love her work.
And the new book,
I haven't seen it yet.
It is so good. It is really exciting, and all of her books are exciting, but this newest one, wow, it's action-packed, and it's going to be fun talking to her. Well, it is glorious here in Florida, even if it's a little bit gray today.
It is a little bit hazy.
I'm not saying that you do that, but on the times that you've been here on Halloween, you have brought some strange weather in with you. Now, we do have a little bit. Carol was born on Halloween Eve in Salem, Massachusetts.
I was.
And she has, and of course your stories are based in Salem. And so we have a little bit of Salem weather here. Just a little bit spooky. It is actually a little bit spooky, isn't it?
It is. It's nice and
which is
foggy.
Unusual. It's mm-hmm. foggy. And
yeah.
I don't know, Carol. I think could this have anything to do with Orion, your cat, in your story?
I would not deny that.
Yes,
Orion has become such a favorite, not only with me but with readers, that twice now Orion has been interviewed by once by Creative Loafing and again by one of the sneaky something. It's a blog that's run by another
cat.
Well,
I think Orion maybe has to start doing commercials for some pet food, make some money.
Love that.
He would.
And he prefers Aunt Ibby's food to what Lee, my protagonist, feeds him. But he probably could select a
because
nice
he's a star. He's on
food.
The cover of all of your books.
He likes
you're
the books
not on the
best.
Cover.
No. Oh, no. And he writes my newsletter, and he gets more fan mail for the newsletter than I do, along with pictures of cats, which he publishes and occasionally mentions me.
Well, it is fun to talk to mystery writers because you guys are always so much fun. I am so happy to be talking to Lisa Gardner today. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Patsy. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Okay, well, it's good to have you back again. And I have in the studio with me Carol J. Perry. She writes cozy mysteries.
Oh, okay.
And she's a great fan of yours. And so it's so funny. I was we were talking about New Hampshire, and I was wondering if have you been doing any walking in the snow, you know, snowshoes lately?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We are absolutely socked in. It snowed most of Sunday. I mean, we are, you know, feet and feet of snow, and I love to do snowshoeing, winter hiking. It's actually where I get all my great ideas for how to kill people.
And I must say, you do get, boy, that mind of yours. Now, Carol writes very, very nice, cozy mysteries. There is nothing cozy about this new book. Is so, I mean, it is, I'm holding it up to the camera because we're here on YouTube and so people can see it. And it's called okay. Never Tell. And it is, wow, you start off with a bang, or how should I say, a lot of bangs.
True.
I mean, and it doesn't stop. And it's so funny. I was talking to David Baldacci the other day, and we were talking about favorite authors, and he said, you know, Lisa's new book is so it's so wild. It's just a nonstop. It's just fantastic.
Lisa's the master of the hook.
He gave such a lovely quote for this book, David did. He and I have been on panels before. I'm a big fan of his work, including his new character, Mercy, who is an FBI agent working the Grand Canyon. One of the things I love about the publishing industry, and you can chime in on this too, Carol, is just how supportive we are of one another, and authors really do. If we're enthusiastic for another author's work, I mean, we love to talk about it.
That's so true. And I was in New Hampshire a couple of weeks ago having breakfast at the Miss Wakefield Diner, and I picked up one of those.
I love that place.
I thought you might. I had grape nut pudding for breakfast. How's that?
There you go.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's eggs and milk and cereal. What could be wrong with that?
It's very New England of you, I think.
Oh, I know. You know. Well, of course, I was born in Salem. But we went up to visit family, and the day I had to leave was the day you were signing nearby. So I miss seeing you there.
Oh,
I'm so happy to speak with you here.
Well, this new book, I don't know. It is so wonderful. You know, you are wearing that that crown as a queen of thrillers very well, because the new book is so exciting. And, of course, it's told from the three protagonists. You have, it's again, you know, we have Dee Dee Warren back. Of course, we love Dee Dee Warren.
Yeah.
And then it's so funny. Now, you know, you started off with Dee Dee Warren, but now it's Dee Dee Warren and Flora Dane, because Flora Dane, when you introduced Flora Dane, it was book eight, right? Book eight. Wow. She just, well, she became a presence. You could not, you know, you could, like, for a while there, she's like taking over this book. I mean, she's in your head.
Yeah.
Wow.
I love it when characters do that, too. So Never Tell came to me as this puzzle. You know, two fatal shootings, 16 years apart, same woman holding the smoking gun. And, I mean, I'm a character-based writer, so I just love that immediacy of, well, so who is Evie Carter? I mean, she is a woman who's just that unlucky, that tragic. Is she a psychopath that's getting away with murder? I don't know your writing process, but I don't know the answers. And that's kind of why I'm showing up each day to work on the book, to figure out what in the world is going on here with this person, this marriage. I loved bringing Detective Dee Dee Warren back. She investigated the first shooting, which happened when Evie was a kid. In theory, she accidentally shot her father, cleaning a gun. You know, Dee Dee never thought about it again, open and shut. Now, 16 years later, walking to a second crime scene, you know, she's offended as a detective. I mean, maybe she got played. Maybe this woman's always been a psychopath, and Dee Dee, of all people, let her get away with murder. I mean, this is personal now.
And boy, oh boy, do you take us on a run. It's one of these books where you start and you say, oh my gosh, it's getting better and better as we go along. You said, Evie, when you introduce her right away, she's became a very fascinating character. Who is this woman? She's pregnant, and she's pregnant, and boom, 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 things just happen. And the way you tell it in 3 points of view, it works so well.
What I liked about Evie is when I did the real life research. So okay, here's my fictional crime, and then what I do as a thriller novelist is I call up law enforcement, and like in the real world, both how would you investigate this, and what happens next. And one of the first things I was told was, because of the late hour, courthouses aren't open. I mean, she would have to spend the night in jail. And what I loved about discovering that and needing to write those scenes is, on the one hand, you meet Evie and she's, the femme fatale standing over her husband's body. But then the next time you see her again, she's pregnant and being locked up in a jail cell. And she's scared, and she's scared for her baby, and she feels like a failure as a mom, and she's traumatized by the night. And so just almost immediately you can't get a bead on her. Is she a killer? Is she just an everyday person caught up in terrible circumstances? And I love how, again, by following real world process, we got to learn so much more about her. And like I said, I didn't know when I was writing the book. It was as big a mystery to me as anyone.
Well, that's really, when I talk about the joy on paper, that's the joy that you have when you start off and you don't know for sure. You don't really know what's going to happen. And then when the characters start taking over and talking and they have their own voices, they become so real. You really feel that you know these people. And of course, Flora, as I said, Flora took over. And it's so, in this book, we learn so much more about her. And I just love what you've put into her.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I find her compelling. She's, as a college student, she was kidnapped. She had went through this terrible ordeal for over a year, but she survived. But she's still trying to find her way to that other side. So she has that vulnerability of someone who knows she's broken, knows she's damaged. There was the girl she used to be who grew up in the wilds of Maine and in so many ways really was naive and carefree. And now she knows things she can never unknow. And she struggles with the very real impacts of trauma, being hypervigilant, not being able to sleep, not being able to focus. I mean, she's like, what kind of job do you get as a kidnapping survivor? I mean, she's like, I can't even add numbers because I can't focus that well. So she's become a vigilante now. She's tracking predators in the streets of Boston. She is killing them with chemical fire. She is doing whatever needs to be done to make the city a little bit safer. And you both feel for her and root for her while knowing that she probably is not healed yet. Yeah, this probably is not the best approach.
Exactly. Not exactly. But it's funny because I think you did write her so well. And she's so memorable. When we had our last spring break last year, she came to mind when we're here in Florida. We are in the area where, they come down and you worry about these girls. And I, as they were showing them on the local TV, being wild at the on the beach, I was thinking, I thought of Flora. Sure. I thought of Flora. I said, oh, well, please, please, girls, be careful out there.
Yeah. Sadly, there really was a lot, too much of, research materials available for Flora Dane. We've had so many of these, high-profile abduction cases. And in getting to talk to survivors, this is a huge issue for them. You know, theoretically, or on the one hand, you know, it's never your fault. It's the kidnapper's fault. It's Jacob Ness's fault. But on the other hand, she made a high-risk decision. She went out and got drunk and wasn't aware of her surroundings. And it's not just that it led to her own abduction. You know, the terror it put her mother through, the ordeal it put her brother through. I mean, she still just struggles with just guilt that this whole thing was her fault. And I think that constant conflict in her and her own awareness of, you know, she does work with a specialist, she's trying to recover, but there's, you know, telling yourself stuff and there's, you know, feeling that way. Those are two very different things.
Well, she, of course, is an amazing character, and I'm so happy with Dee Dee Warren. I love what you've done with her. You know, she's a really dedicated police officer, but she also has a family, and you make that so touching. And I mean, that's the real life. That's what, you know, we have all these police officers. Oh my gosh, they go through so much nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
Their lives are in danger constantly. They go to, you know, deliver a warrant and they get shot, you know, without even a word being said. It's so frightening. And so that's why I think Dee Dee Warren is such a great character, because we do. I mean, we know that she's also a mom and she's got a great kid and who's got a great dog, and we really care about Dee Dee. So, you know, I think also that comes, I think a lot of that comes from the research that you've done with police, with real police people that you deal with.
I spend a lot of time, you know, talking to all levels of law enforcement, from county to sheriff to city to rural, and the thing that always comes across to me is these are very real people. I mean, they're ending their shifts to go watch their kids play soccer or Little League, and they do learn to compartmentalize because, you know, their family lives are very real and important to them, too. And it's tough. It used to be one of those things where to be able to say, I'm a cop, meant everything. And now you get to worry a little bit, almost. And I think that's just so tragic. I mean, I have never interviewed anyone that I didn't think was absolutely exceptional. I mean, this is a job that's not just a job. It's a calling to serve. The hours you work, the dedication you put in, the sacrifice you make. I mean, we owe so much to, you know, the Detective Dee Dee Warrens of the world. And I hope that comes across partly in the books, too. And these are real people doing a really tough job, and like Detective Dee Dee Warren, doing it really well.
Well, I think it does. I think that's why there's such a feeling of realism in your book, that you have done, well, you love to do research, right?
Yeah, I do. It's my favorite part. Hands down.
And you, it's always, it's, I love research, and you always start on one thing and it leads you to another thing and leads you to another thing. And that's a mystery in itself, just the research part.
Well, I think readers are always drawn to suspense because we want to know that inside world of forensics, law enforcement, and there's so many things that are even cooler than what we could come up with in fiction. I remember researching a case where they literally used forensic freckle analysis to capture a kidnapper. They had recovered all these photographs of these women clearly, you know, tied up and abducted, but all they had of the perpetrator was a glimpse of his forearm. But when they finally identified who they thought he was, they brought in an expert, and he was like, well, yeah, the odds are like 1 in 800 trillion that anyone else would have this exact freckle formation on their forearm. And it was just, it was so brilliant, and that made actually perfect sense. What are the odds of people having the same freckles, right? And just the fact that they thought of that, and that, you know, some detective looking at these photos was like, you know what? We'll use the freckles to get him. That's just so cool.
I think it's from your research that you really put this reality into the books that makes, well, you are now, I don't know, you know, this is book 10. I've been reading you since The Perfect Husband,
Yeah,
I remember that book, and I thought, at the time, I mean, like, whoa! I thought this was fantastic, and just through the years, you get better, you know. And it's almost like I say to myself, well, is this one better? I read so much. I read, you know, long series,
yeah,
and I read so many, many things. It's always funny. Like, I told Brad Meltzer one day, well, not only do I remember where I read this book, I remember what I was drinking. You know, so he says,
oh my God.
Yeah. But so I have that kind of memory. But this book, it really stands out. It is like you are, wow, just on fire with this book.
Well, thank you so much. What I really liked about Never Tell was be able to have, you know, one, this really, really intriguing puzzle. But, I mean, I do write for character. I mean, I think at a certain point, you still want Evie to try to figure out this kind of hot mess her life has become. And she's pregnant and vulnerable, and she needs to figure this out because, you know, she's now alone and responsible soon for a child. I think you get Dee Dee in this, I mean, hang on here. I am determined to get the answers this time because chances are I screwed this up the first time. And then you have poor Flora Dane who's gotten dragged into this because if Evie recognizes the wife from the previous shooting, I mean, Flora recognizes the husband of hanging out with her kidnapper. And now she's kind of...
It's all twisted in there. You have all these little clues, all these little twists and turns, and it just carries us right through the book. And I think it's fantastic. Well, you are doing so wonderfully well with your books, and I know that one of the things that I wanted to mention to people that you are. You received the Silver Bullet Award from the International Thriller Writers in 2017. For your work on behalf of at-risk children and the Humane Society. And this is what's wonderful about authors. They, you know, you guys out there and gals make some great money, but so many of you are also so generous, like David Baldacci and his wife, Michelle, who have the Wish You Well Foundation, and you... the work that you've done here for at-risk children, because you've seen it with your research, you've learned these stories, and you know the horrific things that happen to people. And so I think it's just a wonderful, wonderful thing that you're doing to help people.
I really feel passionately the best way to prevent future violence and future criminals is to do more for our kids now. And every law enforcement person I have ever talked to, they're like, if we spent more on social services, you know, if we saved our kids before they were five, we wouldn't have to be arresting them, you know, once they're 25. And anything we can do to reach out and kind of make a difference in that cycle of violence, it matters.
And like David Baldacci and his wife believe so much that if a child starts reading at a young age, they start thinking differently. When you read, you get interested in characters, you get interested in books.
It
opens your mind, and hopefully the kids don't grow up with so many problems. And so I think that what you've done with your work is terrific, and I'm so happy. You know, I'm coming up to the fourth anniversary of my program in a few weeks. And I have...
Oh, congratulations.
Well, thank you. It's been exciting. Sometimes I have to pinch myself that I get to talk. I mean, I was reading you and admiring you so many years before I even... I never thought I would be doing a radio program. And so now that I get to talk to somebody like you, and I know that Carol also says, you know, that right away she said, oh boy, I'm on a program with Lisa Gardner, because you are a favorite of so many people. And one of the things I should mention is, are you still doing the Kill a Friend, Maim a Buddy sweepstakes?
Absolutely. And so, yes, for readers, please go to lisagardner.com, where you can nominate the person of your choice to die in my next novel. I have three different winners in Never Tell. Someone who killed her best friend, but they're both very happy about it. A woman who killed herself. And actually for a charity fundraiser, I did naming rights, and she wanted to become an arson investigator. So, you know, it's the gift of the person who has everything, this whole literary immortality.
That's it. I think that's a terrific thing to do. Again, Lisa Gardner, I want to thank you so much for being on today. And we are just, well, we're thrilled here, you know, just in the studio as we're talking to you. And thank you again so much for being on. And when's the next book coming out?
It's next February.
Oh,
this came out a week ago.
Okay, in time for Valentine's. We can always look forward to your books on Valentine's Day. Okay, Lisa, thank you.
What a great idea.
Absolutely. Thank you again so much for being on Joy on Paper.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye. Whoa. Okay, Never Tell. This is a wonderful book. I tell you, you better make sure that you don't have anything else planned for the day when you get this book. And this is actually a perfect day to get it. You just want to curl up and start reading and reading. It's really exciting.
Oh, I look forward to it.
Well, Carol, we're going to come back and talk to you about Final Exam. We'll have to do a few quick commercials, and then we'll be right back.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660. Or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z, and I am back here in the studio with Carol J. Perry, the author of the Witch City Mystery Series, and her newest book is called Final Exam. Hey, Carol. Wow, this is exciting.
It is, and I was delighted to hear from Lisa, and I love it that she doesn't really know what's going to happen next, because I don't either. I usually know the beginning of the story and occasionally know the end. But I'm fascinated with the way things turn out, and can hardly. Sometimes I think the characters are dictating, and I'm just taking down their words. It's a wonderful process. It's so much fun.
And that's why I tell people this. You know, they'll say, "Well, I have an idea. But I said you have to just start, and it's amazing how often once you start, the words start flowing. They might not be perfect the first time you write it.
They're
never going to be. Even the biggest writers rewrite.
Oh, sure.
I mean, they rewrite sometimes. I mean, I've talked to famous authors who have rewritten the first page or the first chapter 20 times.
I've occasionally, the worst I ever did was chuck out the first 18 chapters of something that was on the first book. It was, because now it's in first person and the characters have changed and the names have changed. But the first 18 chapters, it was in third person. It was terrible. But the place was there, the people were there, and I had an idea of where to go with it, and it got better and better. And now I know the characters better, so I don't throw away 18 chapters at a time. But, you know, a few pages hit the circular file once in a while.
And the thing is, sometimes the characters know best. They'll just give you a kick and they'll say, okay, I'm not doing that. Get it right. I want to do this. I want to do that.
I had in the early books, I've had some characters started out to be quite likable, and I decided I didn't like them. I didn't kill any of them yet, but I did sort of change their attitudes and change their places in the book. A final exam, I know one of your sister Natalie's favorite characters is Lisa Antiope.
Oh, yeah.
And I think this is Antiope's book, because it so centers on some dreadful things that happen 40 years apart.
Well, tell us about Lee Barrett.
Lee Barrett is my protagonist, and she has had experience in the television industry, and she has long wanted to be a field reporter and report on news as it happens. She's been a show host.
And when we started off the book, she was here in Florida, as a matter of fact, and she left.
She left. She went back home to Salem. She did. And she applied for a job. This was in book one. She had a go-ahead from a manager of a TV station in Salem, which I call WICH. There is no WICH in Salem, but there certainly should be.
Yeah.
And when she got there, she found out that a man from another station had been given the job she'd applied for, and her life progresses from there.
Yes. And since then, she's had a few different jobs along the way.
She's managed to have some other things, which happened quite naturally. She had a job teaching at the Tabitha Trumbull Academy of the Arts. And that school takes place in an old New England department store, which has been closed since the 60s. Now, I happened at one time in my life for 10 years or so to be advertising manager in an old New England department store, which later closed. Because in the book, it's haunted. And I'm not sure that the one I worked in wasn't. It could be.
It could have been.
And so that gave her a career as a teacher. And she had some interesting students. And that lasted for a couple of books. And in this book, she finally has the job that she's wanted. She is a field reporter for WICH-TV. And her first assignment turns out to be, I don't want to tip off.
No, don't
much
tip
here.
It off. No,
I won't.
No.
I won't. But
let's go back a little bit to Aunt Ibby, because she, you know,
Aunt
Lee
Ibby
arrives in Salem, and she has her aunt, and she moves in with her, and Aunt Ibby is a character.
Aunt Ibby raised Lee after her parents tragically died when she was 4 years old, and Aunt Ibby has raised her. And Aunt Ibby is a research librarian, very, very technically talented, which Lee isn't, and neither is the author. If it wasn't for grandchildren, I wouldn't be able to do email. But Aunt Ibby is very clever, and I did have to research a lot of that. Aunt Ibby is helpful, of course, with her research abilities and her technical abilities to help Lee and her boyfriend, who is a police detective, very straight arrow detective. Lee also happens to be either blessed with or burdened with a talent she didn't realize that she had. She is a scryer or a gazer, and that is someone who sees things in reflective surfaces that other people do not see. These tend to be disturbing. She's not pleased with this gift, but it has been helpful occasionally. Very hard for boyfriend detective Pete Mondello to accept. She has, everybody in these cozy mysteries has a sidekick, and she has one who happens to be a practicing witch and tarot reader named River North. But Aunt Ibby, in Final Exam, the title comes from the fact that Aunt Ibby is about to have her 45th Salem High School reunion, and she is heading up the committee. And they are some interesting characters. These are some who wrote their own lines. She came from an interesting group of folks. And I don't want to tell you too much about them, but they vary nicely. And one of them, I've been, because book nine will be out in, I just did the copy edits on book nine from Kensington, and that'll be out for Halloween. So I'm already thinking of book 10. And one of the characters from book 8 just was so much fun to write that she's going to show up in book 10.
Now, this, I wish people could, everyone could see her, Carol's face, because when she's talking about her characters, they are so alive to her. They are so real. And she just knows them so well. And it's absolutely delightful. And, you know, since I've read your first book, I read your first book, and I thought to myself, this is really great. And then the next, they kept coming. And as I said to you at the very beginning, I immediately saw them when I was a script writer, so I think in terms of film.
Sure you do.
I always, the books that really grab me are always the ones that I want to put on film myself. And so I saw your books. I said, Witch City Mysteries. I mean, these are just great books. And I am a great believer that at some point Hollywood will find you. Because
I know you believe
I think it would make such a wonderful series, because you have so many things going for you, wonderful characters. Aunt Ibby is the kind of character that one of those seasoned, we won't say old actresses, we'll say a seasoned actress, will get this part of Aunt Ibby and will run away with it. I mean, like, just steal the thing.
Yeah, probably.
Right?
Yep.
And because Aunt Ibby is just the kind of, she's just fascinating. I love the way you've written her. I love that she's tech savvy. You know, she's not a doddering old lady.
No.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy.
Her hair is still red with help.
And she's like you. And, well, not, I don't know if you need help, but, you know, just, I like that she's clever and smart and opinionated. Mm-hmm. And really, in a television series, she would be the one that when they do the promos, they'd always have her in the promo.
You know, the Kensington is very kindly doing a big blog tour for me with a number of cozy mystery blogs. And I had to do interviews on several of them. And one of them said, write it from the point of view of Aunt Ibby. So they were interviewing Aunt Ibby. And they asked Aunt Ibby, if you were in a movie, who would you like to play you? And I thought about that. And you know who Aunt Ibby decided? Jamie Lee Curtis.
Why not?
Why not?
Why not?
The right age.
Well, Jamie Lee Curtis would steal. She'd steal the show.
It would
be actually great casting.
But I have such fun with the characters. In book Grave Errors, which I think was book 5, there were twin retired Boston cops, and everybody liked those cops. So I think I would bring them back.
Yeah, I like them too.
Yeah.
I thought,
and some of the cats that Orion, my hero has met, he's met cats along the way who have suddenly reappeared.
Well, that's why I really hope that we need some little pizzazz in some of these shows. They're just too bland. Mm-hmm. They're not really cutting it. And
they're kind of predictable.
Very predictable. Mm. And that's why I think your books would be so great and your characters would be so great. And
Salem is so great.
And Salem is a character.
That, exactly.
Salem is a character. And
yep.
Nobody's done it right, because it's so rich.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could just, well, with the old department store, with everything, there is so much that you can do. And also having the television studio, I believe in this series. And
I know you do.
I think that, wow, I hope somebody picks it up, because it's just a fun series. And I just need something new. I'm so tired of some of this stuff that it has no personality. And your books have personality. Let
Thank
me put
you
it there.
So much. I was speaking to somebody brought me a few books to autograph this morning at Weight Watchers, and I said I'm so thrilled to have a person come up and say, I like these and I like this, because writing is such a solitary thing. And when I finish a book, no one has seen the end of it except me. I don't use an extra editor. I edit my own work, and I get to the end and I think, do I hit send or delete? Is this really as good as I think it is, or is there something wrong? And you just don't know until the other humans see it and react. And so far, it's been gratifying.
Well, you have done a wonderful job. And I will mention to everybody, yes, Carol can edit her own books because she is a great writer. She has many years of experience writing professionally, writing...
Since I was 19.
Yeah, and doing on a professional level for magazines and things like that. So she's capable. Not all of you, by the way, can edit your own books. You really do need to get an editor.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want anybody to say, okay, well, I can write it and edit and then, you know.
No.
Yeah. And you're... very, very lucky, and they're very lucky. Kensington is very lucky to have you, and you're lucky to have them.
Yeah.
They are amazing. They've done a great job with you. Right from book one, mm-hmm. the cover was the first time I met you.
Yep.
All I saw was the cover. We met at a meeting, and you sort of slid over across the table, this cover, and I looked at this cover, and I thought, oh, wow, this is amazing. And we've just discovered who the illustrator is,
right.
And he has captured the Witch City mystery.
He has, and
story.
Salem, some people think that it's all about witches, which it isn't.
No,
River North is my main witch character. I'm very careful. I mean, you don't want to tick off any witches, so you're gentle with them.
Oh yeah,
and but Salem has a maritime history, and Salem has architecture that's so gorgeous you can hardly believe it. And there's so many facets to it. People say, aren't you tired of this series? I know. Well, what will you do if you get tired? Well, I guess I would stop, but I don't see that.
No.
You can
go on. We could have a television series going 10 years.
Sure.
26 episodes a year. We can do that.
We can do that.
No.
You can write. You can do the screenplay.
That's it.
I don't know how to do that.
But it's wonderful. This is pretty exciting for you. In a few years, you've managed to accomplish so much.
The first book
was 2014.
I mean,
now you were a panelist at BoucherCon 2018.
And next week, I'm at Sleuthfest, the Mystery Writers of America Florida chapter. I'm on a panel there with Diane Stuckert, who is Allie Brandon, and let me see who else is on there. Is Nancy Cohen? No, she isn't. Sarah Sussman. I haven't read Sarah's work yet, but I look forward to it. And Goldstein, Deborah Goldstein, and I have read hers. So all cozy writers. And that's a really good one. And I've been invited tomorrow to do a signing and book talk at the Murder on the Beach Mystery Bookstore in Delray Beach.
Wow.
I know. Wow. And they invited me. I didn't set this up at all. Kensington and
well, Kensington has been great to you.
They
put you on the end cap in Barnes & Noble across the nation.
Yep.
Across the nation. Isn't that exciting?
Yep.
Wow.
This one is also not on an end cap yet, but Barnes & Noble across the nation has it. So that's exciting. And, of course, Amazon and Nook and Kobo.
Yeah,
and
everybody. And but to be in the stores particularly, mm-hmm. it's wonderful for an author. And particularly to be at that end cap position.
I know.
Where people are just walking down the aisle and and because... I mean, that's why it is so important to have a recognizable cover. And, you know, I was talking to Clive Cussler. He was one of the first writers who insisted, you know, because he had come from the advertising world. He had been writing advertisements. I mean, that's where he started off, writing, ads.
Me too.
And so when he started writing at first, you know, he wasn't that big and the covers were different. And then he said, no. He said, I want my covers to look like the story. I want them to send that message so that people see it. And then the series, they say, whoa, that's part of it.
Even the lettering. Now, there's this one person that does the titles and an artist who does the artwork. And they're the same ones on every one of my books.
Yes. And the just... captures the story. Mm-hmm. And of course, Orion is on.
Orion likes the books best where he is biggest on the cover.
Yeah.
His favorite so far was It Takes a Coven.
Oh, there, that's the whole thing. Yeah. Yeah. He got got a quarter of that cover there.
Yeah, he did.
But it's wonderful that you are working with such a great group.
Oh,
Kensington,
I'm blessed.
Really.
I'm a lucky person. I've always been lucky. But when I landed that first manuscript on S.C. Soga's desk at Kensington, it must have been a day when she needed another cozy, because she responded right away, and they bought it. And I've just been, and I'm wonderful. Larissa Ackerman is my publicity person, who just seems to go out of her way to be helpful and wonderful. I highly recommend Kensington.
Absolutely. They are great. Now, of course, you, as I said, you were at BoucherCon 2018. Mm-hmm. Are you planning to go to 2019?
I'm not. I'm going to stay with the smaller ones, like Sleuth Fest. I love that. BoucherCon is so big, and it's such a reader's conference rather than a writer's skill-building conference. And I would pick a panel that I thought would be most interesting, and I would go to that panel, and I would love it, and I would come out, and you or somebody else would say, oh, were you at this one? It was great. And I'd say, no, there's too many things happening here. So I think for the time being, unless they do another one that I can day hop like we did, like you and I both did for BoucherCon.
It was BoucherCon here.
Awesome.
It was awesome here at the Vinoy Hotel, which is such a lovely place.
Oh, that's a fairy tale.
It was just perfect, and we had such a wonderful turnout. Mm-hmm. And as you said, it was my first BoucherCon, and it was my first opportunity to meet so many readers.
Yeah.
The readers were just wonderful, and they are so enthusiastic, and they were so excited to meet the authors. And all of you out there, if you're ever thinking about doing, there were people there who have been to 25 BoucherCons every year. They go, and they are so dedicated to meet their favorite authors.
I signed 48 copies of Bell Spells and Murders that afternoon, one right after the other, till a whole box full was gone.
Yeah.
And the readers were so enthusiastic and just wonderful.
It's wonderful. And Carol, you know, I've just been enjoying knowing you. And as I said, it's coming up to the fourth anniversary of Joy on Paper. And it is one of my, you know, I started off not knowing anybody. I've had some of the greatest literary agents in the world on, you know, like Donald Moss and Mark Gottlieb, and of course Irene Goodman, who was my very first guest, and so many, all of these great authors that sometimes I'm like in awe of, you know, just what the people I've talked to. Mary Higgins Clark has been, I mean, she's been on so many times.
She's like an old pal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She's been on, and of course, Lee Child, and I think, you know, of all of them, I want to say particularly to that Douglas Brunt was the first guy I spoke to. When I started the radio show, I was like, oh, I can manage a woman.
Yeah.
And then I got Douglas Brunt, who wrote the Ghosts of Manhattan. And I mean, he was so delightful and so charming. And after that, I thought, if I could talk to Douglas Brunt, I could talk to anybody. And I have. And but it's been a wonderful thing. And I also love just talk to just authors who are trying. They might not have a bestseller. They might not, you know, ever sell millions of books. But, for example, we have a local author named James McGee. And he's written a bunch of some of them are bigger, but they're books just about things that he's thought about and things that he thinks you might be interested in knowing. And one of his books is called A Brief History of European Diplomacy. And it's a simple book where he's done the research and he's put it together, and he's got in there answers and to questions about European history It's such a fun little book to read. It's available on Amazon, and it's called A Brief History of European Diplomacy, and from Cardinal Richelieu to George Kennan. And it's just, and his name is James Magee, M-A-G-E-E. I think it's a delightful book, a book that if all of you out there, you know, you hear all the news and you're sort of wondering where some of these places are and who some of these people are that they're talking about. And you can learn it in such a nice way because he's just done it. He's done the research himself and he's put it together. And by making it a question and answer kind of book, it's just fun. You read it and you go back and you want to see if you can remember it, you know?
Sure.
So it's just a fun book.
And that reminds, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
go. That reminds me of your interview with Rick Rhodes.
Oh,
Rick
yeah.
Rick is a wonderful interview. And he's such a good writer.
Oh, isn't he?
Yeah. And it was the perfect timing for that particular chapter out of his most recent book. He's written a lot of good stuff.
He has. And he's going to be back. We're going to be talking. We're going to have one particular program about baseball because I'm a baseball.
I know you are.
I love baseball. Yeah. Detroit Tigers. What the heck? I know they're not the greatest team. Okay. I don't care. I love them. I was there, you know, from the time I was a baby. I'm watching the Detroit Tigers. So I'm going to have with Rick because he is absolutely wonderful. And I'm going to have him back and we'll be talking baseball. And I will have you back. I will have you back for Halloween. And I'm telling you, as she's sitting here, I don't know about paranormal, but it's getting foggier and foggier out there. And by the time we leave the studio, we're going to be going around in the. Well, that's what Carol J. Perry does. What's your website?
HTTP and all those slashes and everything. www.caroljperry.com.
Carol J. Perry, because there must be another Carol Perry somewhere, so she uses J. So,
and there was another Carol J. Perry in Salem, and she's a lawyer.
That's funny. Okay. Well, Carol, thank you so much for coming in. The new book is called Final Exam. It's available online everywhere, and it's available in Barnes & Noble. You can go in there, grab it up, and it's a wonderful, wonderful way to spend an afternoon late into the evening. If you start too late in the day, then you're going to be up until after midnight.
Hopefully, yes.
Hopefully. And enjoying Carol's wonderful, wonderful characters. And I want to remind all of you, if you have self-published a book, the Writer's Digest Indie Author competition is coming up. The deadline is April 1st, so you have time, get it, you know, whatever, fill in the applications, do it. The prize this year is $8,000. And as you know, when Writer's Digest has a contest, they do a beautiful job. The readers are all professionals, the kid in the mailroom. They are the real professional literary agents, New York City editors, and there's nothing like a New York City editor except Carol J. Perry, who's an editor, and she does a great job.
I have a wonderful editor, Kensington. I'm not that perfect.
So I just want to, again, thank you so much, Carol, for coming in today.
I enjoyed it, as always,
Kensington. Okay, and remember, everyone, what I always say, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you are really, really lucky, and I think Carol J. Perry will be one day, she will hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. And her books will be made into a television series. That's what I want to see. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. And he's saluting me. And Carol and I are both saluting him because he's a wonderful guy. Thank you so much, Ed. Okay, bye-bye, everybody. Bye.